Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today. Welcome to filmandtvreview.com. Catch the latest film, TV, and streamed show reviews every week. The views and opinions expressed by the authors and those providing comments are theirs alone. They do not reflect the views, opinions or position of filmandtvreview.com or their respective parent companies or affiliates. Filmandtvreview.com makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information in this program and is for entertainment purposes only. Episodes may contain adult humor and language. For full terms and conditions, see filmandtvreview.com.
Hello there, welcome to another edition of Film and TV Review. Joined by my regular hosts, Andrew, Alfonso, and Richard, as they give their little opinion on what was hitting the streaming and cinema releases over the last month. Quite a few titles out for the autumn season. One battle after another, Sentimental Value, Alien Earth, of course, Court Stealing, Wednesday, and a few other titles as we go. So we'll kick off actually with film with, seems like a good word of mouth, it's Leonardo DiCaprio, kind of like a grunge indie comedy, it looks like. But you all three saw this. Looks very intriguing premise, looks like a post kind of like setting the same current climate, a very kind of like rebellious army, kind of like subversive premise. I like Leonardo DiCaprio and trying to find his daughter or something like that. But tell us a bit more about the premise, anyone. Say, Richard, you saw this.
I don't mind that. Alfonso, Andrew can,
Alfonso,
they can go for the plot.
Can you tell me about
directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who will most surely be nominated and even win the Oscar for Best Director at the next Oscars for this film.
You think he's gonna get it for sure?
I would say he's at the top of the list at this moment in the pronosticators list, and everyone is very hyped about this movie all over the Twitter and just the internet, like the favorite movie of film nerds everywhere. Mm-hmm. The plot is about a group of I guess revolutionaries from the left, political left, who do some kind of, let's say, bombings and some kind of violent acts of resistance and disturbance. And there's also, I don't know if I can say more, but the plot jumps into the future at one point, and we get, at some point that the government just goes after them very hard, and they have to disband. And after some years, The DiCaprio has a daughter, let's say, that came from her mother was also he and the child's mother were in this group, and after a few years they are again in danger and chased very heavily. That's kind of like, I don't know if I've said too much, but that's it's a chase movie in it at its center. It's a kind of a comedy and a chase film at the same time. It has very good acting, humor, action, characters, I don't know, everything. It's very, very good in general. And yeah, I liked it a lot. It's also, I thought it's a very cool film. It has a cool factor to it, I guess. So yeah.
Andrew, what did you think? It looked quite promising. Promise, did you like it? Did it deliver?
Yeah. I mean, that was a good introduction that Alfonso did. Basically, I think the reason that this film is getting the best accolades that it's, or the praise that it's getting, it is a good film. For one thing, it's very different, or somewhat different than the director's other films. It's maybe a little bit more grounded, even though some unusual stuff happens. If you've seen other stuff from Paul Thomas Anderson, it tends to be a little bit more unusual in certain ways. This is a little bit more grounded, and it's maybe more mainstream. I don't know. That's maybe up for matter perspective. But the other thing is that it's very timely, at least in the US. I don't know if it was meant to be like that, but just given all the news about what's going on, the revolutionaries that are in the film, the group is called the French 75, and their whole thing is to free migrants who are coming in to the US from, I guess, Latin American countries. Trying to free these migrants out of these detention facilities and try to get them into the integrate them into the larger population in the US. And so early in the film, they come across one of the commanding officers of one of these facilities. It's not, just to be clear, it's not based specifically off of things in real life, but it could seem that way. So one of the commanding officers in these facilities is played by Sean Penn. And without giving away too much, he becomes kind of the main antagonist in the film. So it's not just like a small thing for him. He does appear quite a bit in the film. Also in the film, you mentioned Leonardo DiCaprio, but also Chase Infinity. I don't know what else she's really been in, but she does a really good job here and really does a standout. So maybe she'll be recognized come award season. Yeah, it's definitely timely. Again, I don't know if it was meant to be like that. So I could see how a lot of critics seeing it could be like, that seems like what's going on now in the US. Even though it's a fictionalized version, it's not specifically mentioning things like ICE or real life law enforcement. It's kind of like, but it can seem very similar. And to be fair, the film does kind of critique things on both the right and the left. So it's not like just one instead of the other, just to be fair. But again, I could see how people seeing it, critics or just in general, could see the nods to what's going on now in real life in the US from this film. So yeah, I thought it was a pretty decent film. Again, a little different than the director's other films without giving too much away. But yeah, so we'll see what happens in the awards season. So,
Sure. Yeah. Richard, was it worth the hype, you think? Again, yeah, it's a lot of word of mouth on
well,
this, so.
yeah, I think it was a very well done movie. Yes, I agree with that. Now, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the Oscar buzz and the fact that it's called the best movie of the year. Well, technically, perhaps, yeah, for all the experts in cinema, perhaps, yeah. But I'm trying to put myself in the shoes, or just as an audience member, I've seen better. But I kind of understand where they're coming from by saying that it's a very well done movie. No, I'm not saying that. I did enjoy it somehow, let's say. But let's just say that a couple of days later, I already forgot about it. So maybe, I don't know. Sean Penn is quite amazing in this movie, to be honest, as the bad guy, like Andrew was saying. That I think actually I remember more about his performance than DiCaprio's performance. Why I'm saying that, why I'm not so excited about this movie, is because, well, the director Paul Thomas Anderson has done amazing work in the past. Amazing movies. Some of them I consider almost masterpieces. And if I stupidly compare this one compared to other works by Thomas Anderson, I think it's not his best. Definitely not. I was more amazed when I first saw Magnolia, for example, or There Will Be Blood, for example, or even on a total different genre, Punch Drunk Love. I definitely want to rewatch these ones and not really rewatch one battle after the other, to be honest. So yeah.
Okay. Okay. Onto a more family drama. I think it's showing at the BFI London Film Festival this October. It's a sentimental drama from about a father and two sons. Richard. You
Yeah.
caught this, caught anyone. Intriguing,
Yeah.
pretty good. Highly recommended, do you think?
So I don't know if it's one of those that Alfonso we talked about earlier. One of those movies actually that is released in France first and then released all around the world afterwards or whatever. But yeah, because it has, yeah, as you said, it had a huge success in festivals, and especially in the French Film Festival of Cannes. So yeah, it was a very good, this one, yeah, I'm talking about movies that I remember more than 2 days after watching them. Yeah, this one definitely was pretty great. So yeah, the plot quickly is, so it's a movie from Norway, and you have Stellan Skarsgård, who he plays literally, he plays a very famous name in the film industry, which is kind of who he is. So that's his professional, very public figure, famous face. But what we focus more on is a personal life, where he's actually the father of a family whose wife passed away, and he has two daughters who are in their 30s, 40s. And quickly understand, I'm not trying to spoil much, so quickly understand actually that he has obviously had a very successful plays and films career, but he has not been the best father, let's face it, while his two daughters were growing up. One of his two daughters, I think is the oldest one, played by, sorry for my pronunciation, by Renate Rensve, I guess that's her name, who actually was also in the other movie by made by the same director, Joachim Trier, but I still have to watch, but he's from the, if I'm not mistaken, the Oslo Trilogy by Joachim Trier, which is also very famous, which I haven't seen yet, but now I definitely want to see them. So Renate Rensve is the oldest daughter. She's definitely the main character, because she has become herself some kind of an artist, some kind of an actress, but in a way she has to become herself someone, let's say, and not live in the shadow of both her father but also her parents. And it's kind of a personal struggle, and the personal struggle of the whole family more than anything else, this movie. And it's amazing acting. Everywhere you look at, the acting is, for me, the best of the year by far. I think she's from Norway. Huh? This actress, if she's not nominated at Oscars and Golden Globes and she doesn't win, I don't understand, to be honest. But not only her, even the supporting actress, who, again, I never heard of, was quite amazing. No, I definitely recommend this movie. Quite amazing movie.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, well, as I said, we're getting it now at the festival, at the BFI festival. So,
I don't know when it's released in
well, other. I think it's in October. It's actually in this coming week. We've got the festival going, so it's going to be. It's actually featured there, so it's a good opportunity to catch it. Next, a traditionally a Fox property in the long-running franchise of the Alien world is Alien Earth, which hit Disney. I guess Disney's first series foray into this darker franchise territory. Well respected, well, quite a few over the years and decades, but so it was a bit of trepidation really that this series when it hit. I think it kind of, it's Richard, you saw this. I was nervous about this, but in some cases it looked quite a beautiful looking and very high production value looking series. How did you find that? You've watched the whole episode. I think it's about, what was it, 8 episodes?
I'm not Alien super fan franchise, whatever. I watch all the Alien movies, fair enough. I watch Prometheus. I know about the franchise very well, but I won't consider myself a big fan. I'm guessing that, like a lot of people, when this project was announced on Disney Plus, I was kind of worried because it's not a saga like Star Wars or I don't know, Marvel, etc., where it's definitely family friendly thing. Alien is originally a horror science fiction franchise, let's face it. Very gory sometimes, lots of blood, etc. So you think, how can Disney Plus do it right? Well, after watching 8 episodes, I have the answer. The plot quickly, if you want. The plot is, so tell me if I'm wrong. Interrupt me, Jason, because perhaps I'm thinking about the Alien franchise stuff. So if I'm not mistaken, it's set a couple of years before Alien, the first one. But it's not mainly based on in space, but for once it is based on Earth. I'm sorry about the noise. There's police actually in the streets next to my place. So if you hear noises, I'm sorry about that. Anyway, everything is fine, by the way, but it's just actually that there's a lot of traffic.
Just another day in Paris, isn't it?
Sorry, it's in Paris. So it's 2 years before the first Alien. It's set on Earth. To sum up, we follow the fate of young, children who, through some kind of science fiction process, have their consciousness transferred into the body of very advanced androids, very, very advanced androids, who actually look like now teenagers, young adults, not children, but they are children actually, in the, technically. And we saw the fate of these kids who work for one of the 5 corporations that own Earth. And these kids, their first mission, because apparently they need to actually to have some, they need to do something in their other lives. So this big owner with only like a, kind of a Mark Zuckerberg kind of style corporate guy sent them on a mission to actually to retrieve everything they can from a ship that crashed on Earth, and obviously on that ship, there are a lot of aliens of different kinds, not the only the xenomorph, but they are also xenomorphs. I can, but I guess that's the way you can describe the plot at the beginning of the show. Then the pro okay, so here are my two things to say, and I won't talk about anything else because it wouldn't be fair to anyone who hasn't seen the show. But the two problems is that, as I said, you follow the fate of these kids slash teenagers, and you mostly follow them. So in a way, it's more a show about kind of a Blade Runner-ish show, which isn't fine, by the way. I don't mind. Huh? It's there are quite of interesting stuff about in this show about robots and the fact that they are souls and they want to evolve, etc. But not much about the alien. I mean, the xenomorph is there like
A
for no
guest
reason
star,
sometimes, and even when he shows up, he looks terrible. I mean, sorry to say, but I don't know how much this show costs, but they managed to have a xenomorph that looked less convincing than the one that we had in the 80s.
It is a look, it is an expensive looking show. It does look beautiful. And that's it. And like I said, I mean, the whole premise of Alien is obviously it's a slasher killer, a haunted house, xenomorph that is just killing off crew one by one, traditionally, and then variations of that in subsequent sequels. In this series, it's the least interesting part of the show. It is more like he just makes guest appearances. It is. I'm glad they went more in a practical suit, but it is a very much average-looking guy, just prancing around in a suit, and you kind of like think, okay, well, you've made your guest appearance just in case you forgot what show you're looking at. But on the other flip side, the most interesting part of this show is the exploration of android, synth, cyborg. So. How, what our future and our place is it with it, if as we go to integrate ourselves with it. Some interesting ideas, but it probably would have been more fair to call this a Blade Runner the TV series, I would say, because that's the some interesting hooks in there, and it is about corporate politics and everyone trying to get their hands on this biological materials, and as you say, this ship crashes with a menagerie of Disney aliens, I almost say, because some of them are kind of
Yeah, because I mean, I said
very
that they are
comical, let's
xenomorphs.
say.
Obviously, they are xenomorphs. They are xenomorphs in this thing, but there are other kind of aliens who are, I don't know. They are just there. I mean,
That they are just there. It seems the greatest mastermind there is
an eye,
the
the eye.
eyeball who doesn't speak, but he seems to be doing all the plot thinking and the great brains behind the entire series, really, which is intriguing. And I think, you know, is maybe an internet favorite now, as in, you know, a
And
what?
then, and back to what I was saying about horror franchise. Well, good job. You did an alien show of 8 episodes, and there is, I think, I mean, when is it gory? When there is blood? I mean, perhaps in 2 scenes out of 8 hours of show. So well done. That's
It's almost I feel like that was the compromise you have to do
A family friendly alien.
when you come under a Disney banner, because even though you can sub separate it, oh, this is Hulu, or it used to be maybe here, but I think there's not really a distinction anymore. It's on your platform, so I think they have to be. I don't think there were any restrictions on here because it is quite. They're bloody, but they don't dwell on it. But I don't think they compromise themselves too much. But I think this is more of an ideas show, and it's very intriguing. I think some good casting there. You got Timothy Oliphant as a almost like
And
a Roy
I think
Batty
even
light kind of like
there are a couple of newcomers. Well, I call them newcomers because I don't know them, but perhaps they did this thing before. But the guy, so I'm gonna describe him. The guy who plays the android who survived the crash. Let's describe him like this. The only survivor of the crash, like let's call him this way. I thought he did a great job. The main female character, who is the main character, I
Who
think she
plays
did a great
Wendy?
job as well.
Yeah, she's standout actually.
Yeah.
She's very
And there is her brother who played in Andor and
Alex
is
Northwood.
pretty good as well. And yeah.
It's a good dynamic between the brother and sister, and
Yeah.
I think there's this central question because it's his dead or sister, or they kind of promise this kind of idea of you can have a new body, but then is this really your sister or is it just a carbon copy? And it's that kind
Yeah.
of most interesting question about the whole series. But I think it's kind of like a lot of people were saying, well, what does happen afterward? They don't seem to answer questions all so much. But I think this is more just leading into a season two, which I'm more pleased with it than unhappy with it. I just expect it a bit more of a vanilla alien, and that's fine. You just have to deal with it. I generally, would you like a season two, Richard? Or you kind of like,
I don't care.
you don't care. You're not alone.
I
You're
don't
not
care.
alone.
Yeah,
But
people.
I thought it was not too bad. Not there are worse things in the Alien franchise. There are further, more horrible crimes, but. No, I'm on the fence on this one. Yes. Okay. And Andrew, you also saw Alien Earth. You where are you on this? We're kind of like almost both sides of the fence with between me and Richard.
I was really into it in the beginning, and yeah, it's called Alien Earth, but I guess it focuses a lot more on the world building. I mean, we've seen it in the movies, but here it expands upon that. At the very beginning of the show, they do an explanation of the different types of artificial life forms, I guess,
Yeah,
that
cyborgs,
they
synths,
have the
and yeah,
hybrids, which are the
hybrids.
main characters,
Yeah, hybrids.
human consciousness. Download into
Yeah,
artificial
yeah.
constructs. You have the synths, which you've seen so far, like in the movies, which are
Yeah.
total artificial, everything's artificial. And then you have cyborgs, like that Moro character in the
Yeah.
show, who's basically human but
That's what his
has
name. Yeah, the one I
artificial.
was talking about. Okay, yeah,
Yeah.
Moro. Yeah.
So Moro is the lone. Whatever of that ship crash.
Yeah.
And that's actually the most interesting part of the show, even though you focus a lot more on the characters on Earth. I guess the best episode for me, and maybe for other people, is in the middle of the series where you have a flashback to what happened on the Maginot,
Yeah.
the ship, which is basically the serious counterpart to the Nostromo.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
Nostromo is in the first movie. This is Maginot is on the series. So you think, like, oh, I know what happened, and it kind of puts on its head, so to speak. So I don't want to spoil what happens, but it definitely makes you rethink things and evaluate, certain motivations of the characters. And the other thing about the world building is the idea that the world is divided up into separate corporations rather than governments. You've seen that in the movies a little bit, but here it's not just about Weyland-Yutani. Yeah, you do see them in the series, but the main focus is this other company, Prodigy, which you've already mentioned and talked about. And that's like a rival company, but also like a rival government that transcends what we could think of as borders in our present day. So basically, the ship crashes in what's called New Siam, New Siam,
Yeah.
whatever. Basically, I guess it's Bangkok, or I'm not sure what city it's supposed to be, but
Metropolis, yeah,
yeah.
Metropolis.
But it basically, in this world, the companies transcend borders, and so you have Prodigy versus Weyland-Yutani, and Prodigy wants to lay claim to things that are on the ship because it crashed in its territory. So. And then you see some of the other extraterrestrial characters, whatever you want to call them, the Eye, the Ocellus, tell us whatever the eye of the tentacles,
yeah,
and the ticks, and the those flies.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like a lot more extraterrestrial entities, or if you want to call them characters. And they're more interesting in some ways than the xenomorphs. So, yeah, the xenomorphs are there. They're all right, but there's just so much more on the show going on.
Yeah.
That said, I do feel it kind of peaked in the middle with that flashback episode. And then after that, it's kind of okay. But then the series, without giving too much away, just kind of, it seems like they kind of rushed through it a little bit. I don't know if it's because they maybe were filming it during the strikes, but it had to stop filming at a certain point and restart much later. And at certain points, the actors couldn't work together because they were under different unions, depending on the country. So I feel like there were certain things that aren't really resolved. Maybe there'll be another season, and then they'll answer those questions. But it's sort of like, okay, you know, you kind of got this thing, but what does that mean going forward? And certainly, how does it tie into the movies? So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of interesting world building and a lot more than, you know, what you've gotten so far. But I think if you just go in expecting xenomorphs, you've already said this, but if you go in expecting like that, it's maybe a little disappointing. But if you go in with the idea of that it seems more of the world building, maybe it's a little bit better. I mean, I thought the show was okay, but there could have been more things during the second half of the season that would have maybe made it better. So,
It is a kind of like a problem, it seems, when you've got now inherited franchises with a fan base and their expectations of what they think or what they want and what a series has to deliver, and from their perspective, make it fresh for a new generation. Not mentioning other names, Star Wars, but it is a bit problematic. The world building is probably what they're leaning to, and you know, it's intriguing enough just to leave the alien behind. But I don't know, it's interesting anyway. But we'll see. I actually hope there is a season two, but we'll see. Right, next. Looks like a it's called court stealing, I think. It's come on, looks like a crime, kind of like almost comedic. It's got Austin Butler, Man of the Moment, and a mohawk to Matt Smith from Doctor Who fame. Certainly from the trailers.
Zoe Kravitz as well, yeah.
So it's kind of a criminal underbelly, kind of like someone finds themselves some unexpected circumstances. Richard Usel. It looks quite intriguing because these are two quite good actors, actually. Very, very good character actors.
Yeah. So that was a good surprise because I didn't, when I went to see it, I didn't know anything about this movie, not at all. Well, I knew because of the poster that Austin Butler was in this movie, and I know it was by Darren Aronofsky. Another very talented director, by the way. But I didn't know anything else. So it was a good surprise. Sometimes you take a shot, you go to a movie theater, you watch one thing, and you just cross the fingers. And yeah, in that case, in a way, this is the kind of movie that I feel like I don't see in movie theaters anymore, if you know what I mean. Not that actually it's the kind of movie that you will see only on streaming services nowadays, but it's a bit sad that these movies back in the day when I was growing up, there was room for these movies to be released, this kind of movie. What I mean is that it's not a blockbuster. It's not I don't think it's an Oscar bait, or it's not made for the Oscars. Perhaps, I don't know, but I don't think so. It's just a good movie that you watch on Friday night, you know?
So yeah, middle, like medium budget, not independent, not blockbuster.
Exactly. Because obviously you have the choice of releasing these things on streaming or not releasing them at all, whatever. So obviously, yes, it's not there's not much room for these things, and that's why I was kind of happy to feel this way again. yeah, to sum up the story, and I will not go into details because surprisingly, no pun intended, surprisingly, there are twists in this movie, things that I didn't see coming, and that's why I like even more this movie. So Austin Butler is the main character. He plays the main character, and
is
a
he caught stealing?
Sorry?
No, sorry. Is he caught stealing?
No. That's not too easy. That's a too easy twist. But yeah. No. So he's a bartender in New York, I think. Yeah, in part of New York, New York City. I mean, he's a bartender, kind of. Feel like he failed his he's a failure, he failed his life because back in the day, a few years before the movie started, he had chances to become some kind of successful, I think it baseball, not basketball, baseball player, I think. He had the chance to become a baseball player, a professional one, but he made terrible mistakes that ended up having him having a terrible car accident. And I will not say more about this. And obviously, his career ended before it even started. So now he's like, yeah, so the bartender, and he's dating a character played by Zoe Kravitz. He lives in a kind of a difficult neighborhood, and his neighbor is played by, trying to think about what I can say, he's played by Matt Smith, who is a kind of a drug dealer, drug addict, who at first seems friendly. And, you know, it's that kind of, it's those kind of plots where just a random thing happened to him at some point in the first 15 minutes of the movie, and it's starts a chain reaction, and he becomes involved with all a list of all terrible people in New York, and he has to find a way out. That's a very I'm very proud of what I just did. It's actually that doesn't give you any spoilers, and it's actually a very good way actually to give you maybe the intention of seeing this movie. But yeah, that's kind of it. And yeah, he's involved with mafia, police, and everything. And then it's when it starts, after a very small introduction of 10, 15 minutes, it's kind of nonstop. And I really, really enjoyed the ride. And as I said, especially there's a couple of twists, but there's one particular twist I really didn't see it coming. And I was amazed by it. So yeah, very good movie. Very nice little movie. Not Oscar worthy, but very nice movie.
Oh, glad, yeah. You don't really get those like middle, nice,
yeah,
buddy comedy. Well, I'm not sure how comic it is, but it looks like very good character pieces and good
it made me
actors.
Think in a total different genre. It made me think of Panic Room. I don't know why, because it has nothing to do with Panic Room, but it's the kind of movie that you would watch in movie theaters back in the day, in the 2000s, 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not a chance that a movie like Panic Room will have a huge window of opportunity in the movie theater nowadays, I guess. But
okay, it's a catch on streaming if you can't
yeah.
get it on the cinema, but I'll keep an eye out for that. Next, House of Guinness, which is the historical drama on the, I'm guessing on about the start of the Guinness Empire, I think, from the Founding Fathers. Alfonso, you saw this. Looks like a big costume drama. I think they're looking to maybe, you know, you saw what? The first episode of this, the pilot?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of episodes. Yeah, it's from Stephen Knight, the creator of Peaky Blinders, and weirdly enough, also the creator of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the TV show.
Really?
TV, yeah, the yeah.
Stephen Knight created Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah, with other people, but yeah, he's one of the creators. So I guess he's a millionaire himself.
I really didn't know. It's funny. Okay, it's a funny story. Okay.
And yeah, he has been mainly known for Peaky Blinders. And this is, well, I mean, I haven't watched Peaky Blinders, but this seems different because it's like one of these movies where a series where a death in the family starts the whole plot. So this is the father of the Guinness brewery empire, let's say, of like alcohol drinks. He dies, and he has three sons, one daughter, who are thinking about what will happen with what they will get in inheritance, and when the will is read in the second episode, well, they all get pissed for different reasons. and there are characters around them who want different sorts of things from them, and they all want different things than what they got. And so it's about high society. It's about ambition, but not like in a very wild way. Let's say it feels like a little bit Gilded Age. Let's say it's quite more calm than a gangster kind of series, and it's about people talking in rooms and some riots, from what I've seen. That it has a lot of, I mean, it's an expensive series. It's historical and high society, so expensive. I think it's nicely done. I think it can please most people. I wasn't thrilled. I wasn't bored. I was just okay. It's I can just keep watching or not. Was entertaining enough, let's say. But I think for my taste nowadays, I wish the plot moved a little bit faster. But it's quite assured. The series is quite assured in what it does. So even it takes its time, but knows where it wants to go, and you know that it's going to be well. And so that's my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. I'm guessing it's trying to exist in the space where you've had series like family dynasties like Succession and I guess Peaky Blinders and all that. So I'm guessing that's where they're aiming to get their market.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that it's the same kind of, I think that Succession, it's also three brothers and one sister. But it's, yeah. I mean, but Succession, it also has a very living father. And a lot of swearing. This is much more polite and scheming in a little bit of backstabbing, a little bit of a tell me everything that you know about this brother that is doing this secret thing with that person. I want to know everything that can compromise his political career, because there is also the father left a lot of things, left money or no money, and the control of a business or not, and a political career. So all of them have kind of, some of them have plenty, some others are a little bit left without much.
Okay. Are you intrigued? I'm just running. Would you go watch episode 2, 3? Has it hooked you?
I think I am keeping with it, but okay. In a non-prime time. More like the after lunch time.
Oh, fine. All right.
I have a question for you guys. Yeah. Don't you think? I mean, when I saw I have Netflix, and so you have recommendations, and obviously House of Guinness was everywhere for a few weeks, and I didn't know it was Steven Knight, by the way. So that's a good selling point. Just for this, maybe I watch it. I don't know. But when I saw the title, I was thinking, is it me or Hollywood, since Social Network has realized that people want to know how big brands were born? You know what I mean? It's like actually they tro because I was thinking there is Social Network, now is this, but there were also like Tetris on Apple TV, if I'm not mistaken. There was this crazy movie on Amazon a few years ago about Air, Michael Jordan basketball shoes. And I think
Yeah, because
I don't
brands
know.
are also IP. Let's
Yeah,
say it,
to
very
attract
well
the
known.
yeah, to attract the guests, yeah, to the people, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's
Yeah,
that.
so everything can get a movie, even those all these. And yeah, talking about the social network, all these apps, all these companies that created apps, even the companies that didn't create an app but sold a concept that thought it was revolutionary. Yeah, I got
Uber,
some
all that.
examples out there.
Yeah.
Because what Aaron Sorkin wrote, the screenplay he wrote, obviously, Zuckerberg and other people involved said that actually, but it is definitely a distortion of the reality. It's not a real, it's just inspired, but definitely not a real life event that we see on screen.
Right,
And I think,
you know now there is a sequel.
Yeah,
There
there's
is
a
gonna
sequel
be
to
short,
some
yeah,
reason, yeah.
about the.
But I'm thinking perhaps, yeah, perhaps the producers think, yeah, you're right, but actually, that's these brands, obviously, it's a big name, so people will watch. But how much, what's the word, faith can people have in those streaming movies or movies? Obviously, these things are, I mean, the twist and turns and all the stories they create behind those brands, I don't think that all of them are completely true, but they're just made for cinema. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm surprised that all the stories of the genesis of these big brands, they all involved like struggles and fights, etc. Like, not all of them are worth a movie. That's what I'm saying. But maybe it's me. I don't know.
Well, there are
Yeah.
many brands. I'm sure
Yeah.
not all of them are worth
No.
a film.
But I think it serves as a hook. I think this is what we, if you're looking at the age of what we it's like you've got Barbie movies, you've got Mario. This is the same kind of thing. I know, oh, Facebook, I've heard of that. Oh, let me intrigue you. It's a recognizable people said, I think it's just a hook. It's just the age of film and TV where we are now. Instead of doing something totally fresh, it's either a remake or a known brand. And then that's, I think that's what big
But
companies,
it
because
might
they
be
run the
great, huh? I
studios and
mean,
TV, that's what gets the green light, really. And I think that's why. But the intriguing stories, I do like those, how you people got there. It's a lot of drama involved in it, or the promise of it, because you imagine these people have had to do things to get there, and can be
I mean,
inspirational
I
or
wasn't
warning.
being negative about this. I mean, Social Network, I think, is still a very good movie. It's a very, very well done movie. And because of Steven Knight, I would definitely watch House of Guinness, but it's just more of an overall comment. I was thinking, yeah, maybe that's like a thought that these Hollywood producers have had in
Yeah.
recent years.
Right. Well, next to another branded TV spin-off.
Yeah.
Well, so you can feel comfortable. Let's see Adam's Family spin-off series Wednesday, which this is his second season with Jenna Ortega as the title character, reprising her role again. So big kind of hit. I think season one kind of hit the social media kind of nexus, the dance. Well, Richard, you've saw this. Is it season two in full swing? You're a devotee, I'm guessing, of Wednesday Addams.
Let's start with the not my thoughts, but let's start with the plot, kind of. So, kind of in Harry Potter series, this Wednesday show apparently is one season equal 1 year in this Harry Potter-like school. So this is the second school year of Wednesday Addams in this school that I already forgot the name of. a private school, etc. Of
Nevermore.
A private school, but is, yeah, thank you.
I haven't seen it.
Is kind of a mix of Hogwarts and Charles Xavier X-Men thing. Because people have superpowers for some reason. And anyway, so so in the second season, the first season was kind of a murder mystery, kind of, whodunit. And that was very interesting. The whole plot of 8 episodes was literally one plot, kind of a whodunit. And the main character, Wednesday Addams, was kind of the one actually trying to find out who's who, etc. Very interesting for me, the way it was told, the first season. The second season, the plot, that's maybe the main problem, is how to explain the plot of the second season. There's like five different plots intertwined. I don't know. It's just that, yeah, there are problems that involve the roommates, played by whoever it was, who played in Minecraft as well, who is actually maybe the most interesting actress of the show, trying to remember, Emma Myers, yeah. So there's a plot involving her and developing some part of her, some side of herself. She's becoming, well, spoiler alert for the first season, she's becoming some kind of a werewolf. And but also the whole school, the new director of the school, played by Steve Buscemi, is a kind of a very weird psychopath. That's another storyline. Then there is the storyline of the bad guy, the first season, that comes back to haunt everyone. That's the third storyline. Then, I'm not joking, then there are the parents of Wednesday Addams, who are much more involved in the show, in the second season. Even his brother, her brother, is much more involved. And there is a plot with her brother and some kind of a zombie. And then you have another plot with the parents and her mother's past that goes back to haunt Wednesday Addams. There is so much happening in the space of 8 hours. That's so crazy. There's like 1,000 characters, 1,000 things happening. So yeah, if you like things happening on screen, and you can be glued. But honestly, it's such a mess for the first, I would say, 5 episodes, that you kind of give up following all these things. Fortunately, I have to admit it, the first 3 episodes are much more interesting, even though they tried to solve everything at once. But still, I have to admit it, yeah, the ending is much better. Even the acting gets better for some reason, by the way. Even Jenna Ortega, I've never been impressed by her acting performances in the past, but definitely the second part of this show, of the second season, is much better in that regard. I wasn't very impressed by the second season. I really enjoyed the first season like everyone else. I mean, the first season broke the viewership records of Netflix all time. Second season, I don't think it will, and for good reason. And I'll finish my kind of review by saying that I mentioned that in Caught Stealing, there were a couple of twists that I didn't see coming, and I was amazed because that was really good, you know? Maybe it's a twist at the end of... I will not say what it is. There is a twist in the series and finale of Wednesday Addams. When you watch it, guys, you will laugh your ass off. Because I was thinking, who is the writer of this show? Because it was the stupidest thing. It makes sense. I'm not saying that doesn't make sense, but it's one of the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And it definitely got inspired by Harry Potter, by the way, but it doesn't matter. It's just that they sell this like the big twist of the whole show, and you say, what? So who gives a shit? I mean, but it's hilarious. The whole scene is like very dramatic. I say, okay, that fell flat completely. So yeah, that made me laugh. But yeah. So yeah, overall, obviously, I didn't like much Resident Evil. Yeah.
Fair enough. Right. Next. more grounded series. Looks like The Late Shift. It's about, I think, covering the shifts of medical staff, a dedicated nurse. Those who work in healthcare know how horrible these shifts are, as I do myself. In an understaffed hospital ward. Quite intriguing by this. Is it so what is it, does it go into thriller territory, does it, or is it more kind of a grounded look at
Very grounded. Very, very grounded. Yeah, that's interesting too. Yeah, that's definitely a roller coaster of emotions after talking about Wednesday Addams. So yeah, no, it's this yeah. So this talking about earlier about One Battle After the Other, this might be in my top three of the best movies of the year. I'm not even joking. And I wonder if actually it's not so far for me again, huh? The best movie of the year. So yeah, so it's a co-production between Germany and Switzerland, and I joked about the fact that it is the first movie that I watched coming from Switzerland. It stars Leonie Benek, who is so I think she's from Germany, but not from from the German part of Switzerland. She's German. And who actually has appeared in a couple of movies before where she was quite good. She had a supporting role a few months ago or last year. The movie about, what was the name? September 5th, if I'm not mistaken. The movie about the Munich Olympic hostages from the point of view of ABC. Am I right? That's the name of the thing, September 5th?
And the teacher's lounge.
And Teacher's Lounge, yeah, from Germany. Teacher's Lounge, I saw it as well back in the day, 2 years ago, I think. But anyway, she's a great, good actress. I mean, in September 5th, she was only a second supporting role, but Teacher's Lounge, she has a main role, and that was a very strange movie about, obviously, school. Very good movie. Anyway, in that case, in the case of Late Shift, so you follow her, she plays a nurse, and you literally follow her night shift. So it starts like 8, 9 p.m. and all the way to 5, 6 in the morning. And it is so well directed that it almost looked like a documentary most of the time. Very well done, very impressive. A few long sequences without a cut, very well done as well. And you literally, when you watch Leonie Benek playing, you completely forget that actually that she's an actress sometimes. That's how good she is. I never worked in a hospital. Obviously I know that it's one of the biggest issue in a lot of countries, France, I'm guessing UK as well. But actually it has limited staff, there's limited funds and et cetera. And it's a recurring issue in a lot of countries. Well, literally, if you had doubts about the issues, watch this movie because yeah, it's definitely a movie about that as well, about how you ask one person to do 1,000 things a minute, and obviously it's impossible. So she does her best, and yeah, as I said, yeah, it's extremely realistic. That's why I enjoyed it so much, and it's not that long, and which is a good thing. I think it's like an hour and a half or something like that, if I remember, which is great because it feels again like a documentary in a way that actually that you just there is no time wasted on I don't know on the, some added storylines for some reason. No, it feels again you just go through her pain, her struggles, and that's it. No, it's definitely a great experience in movie theater. I know that again, yeah, this one, like others that I mentioned, was very successful in festivals, so not surprised. No idea what he's gonna do in the US early next year at Golden Globes and the Oscars. But I believe that he's trying to get a nomination in the International Feature Film category, and I hope he would get it because, yeah, it definitely deserves it. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that's good to hear. Actually, we'll catch that, I think.
Definitely worth your time, guys. Definitely worth your time.
Right. Next, a genre piece. I think from the pen of Stephen King. The Long Walk, was usually a good premise with Stephen King movies or books that become movies. Andrew, you saw this. Usually his material does make good premises, Stephen King's adaptations. How did this one fare then?
It's based on one of his earlier novels. It was one that he wrote under the Richard Bachman name or pseudonym early in his career. So what happens here, it's very dystopian, and it's set in a I guess an alternate version of the US, but again it's a very timely story given what's going on. So it's interesting enough, directed by Francis Lawrence. That's something that they play a lot in the trailers. Francis Lawrence, he's known for doing the Hunger Games movies. And basically, just to elaborate on what the rules are, at least as far as I understand it, it's a little different than what they are doing in the novel. So similar to the novel, but not exactly the same. There's a group of young, I guess, boys, teenagers, they're gathered together, and the rules are they walk for however long, be like hundreds of miles. And if they go below 3 miles an hour, then they get a warning. And if they don't pick up the pace, they get two more warnings, and then they get shot. You know, this is just the basic rules, not really spoiled. That's the rules as they're established. Now, if they go for an hour, if they get their first warning and they go for an hour and they go at their normal pace of, 3 miles an hour or more, then they get a warning taken away, whatever. But the point is that they basically have to keep walking until there's only one survivor. So, yeah. And what basically is in this film is that there's a, I guess you have the protagonist, I guess Ray, I think. He's played by Cooper Hoffman. And speaking of Paul Thomas Anderson, Cooper Hoffman is known for doing one of that director's films. So here he's, I guess you could say he's like the main character, but there's a number of characters that we focus on. And then there's the other actor who we focus on. He played, I guess, Andy in the Alien Romulus. So in the beginning, you have the different rivalries between the different boys, different guys, and it starts out very light, relatively. And they're going to have a military escort with the major known, well, you don't really get his name. You just call him the major, from what I recall, but he's played by Mark Hamill. But there's a little bit of a history there, but I'm not going to really mention more about that because of spoilers. So I guess you could say he's the main antagonist, Mark Hamill's character, but really the greater scope villain, as it were, is this whole society they live in. To do the Hunger Games analogy, again, it's from that same director. There's been some kind of conflict in the US, some kind of civil war, as it were, economic collapse. And so the US is trying to get back to something, society, some kind of normalcy-ish, I guess. And so the idea is that things are pretty bad economically, and if these boys participate in the long walk, why, yes, why they do something that's potentially deadly, to the winner, they can get anything they want, and they're basically set for the life. So it's a pretty bad society that they're living in. So they obviously want to do this to get out of the poverty, the extreme bad situation they're in, and it's also a popular form of entertainment. Again, to do the Hunger Games and other analogies, analogy with another Stephen King story that's getting a film later this year, or a different version of it. So it's similar stories that we've seen before. That being said, it is pretty well done. It's pretty disturbing. I mean, I've seen it classified as horror. It's kind of a mix of horror, drama, different kinds of. But I would say it's more in the sense of it's a pretty horrific situation, and just the idea that society has come so badly that they have to kind of resort to this. So, I mean, not something uplifting to say the least. It's something pretty dreary, and you see these people who they can't stop walking or drop below the 3 miles an hour speed limit that they have. They have to go at least 3 miles an hour. There's no bathroom breaks. There's no people get hurt. They get injured. And, you know, it still doesn't matter to the people running it. So it's just, yeah, it's a pretty disturbing situation. And you get to see, like, what happens when people just have their normal body functions. You know, they just can't acknowledge them. So, and you get a little bit of idea of, like, the backstory of, you know, what's going on, at least with one of the characters, and why they're doing this. So yeah, it's definitely something that's worth a watch. But again, it's not something that's the most uplifting, certainly in these times. But again, timeliness, as with you know, when you talk about one battle after another, this is also kind of a timely thing, even though it's based on a novel from decades ago, and they've attempted to do an adaptation decades ago. I think George Romero was going to do one at some point, but yeah, so that's what I thought of it, worth a watch.
I have a question for you, Andrew. Is it, I mean, are there scenes shocking or gory or whatever? Because in France, it was released like 48 hours ago, and I think it has a minus 18 or minus 16, actually, what do you say, parental advice
certificate, okay.
Which is a quite in France it's quite a strong parental advice, actually, but it's literally forbidden for kids under 16 or under 17 or something like that.
I mean, I would say it's really a family film. I mean, I don't know to compare it to other films, but I mean, there's definitely more violent films out there. I think it's just what happens. I mean, there is violence in the film, but I would say it's more disturbing what's going on in general, rather than any particular scene. I mean, there are violent scenes in it, but it's more disturbing just the idea that people have to resort to this. And again, things seem pretty light in the beginning of the film, but then it gets darker and darker as the walk continues. And yeah, it's definitely disturbing in that sense. So it's more psychologically disturbing than anything you see, even though there is plenty of violence in it. So that's, yeah, I don't know how the rating systems work in other countries.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I know. No, I was just wondering, but anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks, Matt. Next, I think another kind of like lauded film, I think, in competition at, and for the Palme d'Or, I think, was that Simple Accident, which is, I think, a Iranian director or backdrop. I think involving an accident that sets in motion a series of consequences. I think it gets an authoritarian kind of backdrop or themes that it's discussing. Richard, you saw this, very intriguing, worth the hype and the awards that it's been touted around it.
Palme d'Or in Cannes. So it's released apparently around the world, or it will be released around the world in the name. The name is It Was Just an Accident, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it's Un Simple Accident, which is the original name. It's a movie by an Iranian director called Jafar Panahi, who quite famous already. But also, I mean, it's not a real French movie, but it's kind of complicated. It's definitely an Iranian director, but it was produced by France, because obviously, even the topic made him actually forced him actually to create this movie outside of his own country. So what's about? Again, I'm not trying to talk much about this movie, but I mean the plot, because it's only been released, I think, in France. So it follows the story of a guy who works in a as a mechanic in a garage in Iran, obviously. The movie is set obviously after a lot of tragic events, political events in Iran. And he, this mechanic, and like a lot of other people, he's in his 40s, 50s, a lot of other people went through terrible times years or decades earlier. They were tortured because they were supposed to be political opponents or whatever. So they were tortured, etc. So now they kind of live in an Iran that is perhaps more stable. But this mechanic at the beginning of the movie thinks that he recognized one of his torturer, one of the guys who actually tortured him. Although while he was tortured, he was mostly at a blindfold, right? Most of the time. So he only guesses that he has found just by mistake, by chance, one of the guy who tortured him for days and weeks and months. So he decides, I'm not gonna go too far in the movie, into the movie. He decides to kidnap this guy, and instead of just killing him, kidnap him and go find other people, friends of his, who also were part of the people who were tortured, to help him identify this guy. So in a way, this movie is obviously it talks about tragic stuff, but it's very dark comedy most of the time. It talks about political stuff, obviously. It talks about, as I said, torture. There is nothing graphic. They just talk about it, the fact that they've been tortured. They just talk about it. But there's always, it becomes quickly actually a road trip, almost. A road trip of four or five of these friends who are in their 40s, who each one of them try to recognize this guy, and there is kind of an internal fight for them to decide whether or not he is the one, whatever they have to do if he's the one, and how will they feel, how if they felt for the last few decades, and how would they feel if they do to him what they did to them. So it's very psychological, dark comedy. Not thriller, but drama, definitely a drama. It's a really good acting, very well good, like great acting actually. And it's, as I said, it's a very surprising plot because, as I said, a lot of time you laugh in this movie. It made me think, I tried to say to a friend of mine, I say, it's kind of Little Miss Sunshine. If Little Miss Sunshine was set in Iran, during a dictatorship with torture as the main topic, because almost of the movie is like this, is like To Me Sunshine. I recommend it because for me it is, for once in a lot of years, for a long time, for once I agree with people actually who gave the Palme d'Or, because this thing definitely deserves all the recognition he got. For example, last year, Anora got the Palme d'Or, if I'm not mistaken, and I still don't understand why, to be honest, because I think it was, I mean, it's a good movie, but come on, all this recognition, I don't get it. This movie, deserves everything it gets, I think, and it deserves to be, people should see it, definitely, just to have their own feeling. And the last 20 minutes, it's quite extraordinary what you see on screen. The lights and the cinematography, and it's very stressful, but not in a bad way, let's say. And last but not least, I would say that the last perhaps 1 minute of the movie is perhaps the best ending I've seen in decades, because it is extremely smart. and the director kind of play with the audience. And that's very, to give you an idea, again, no spoilers here, no worry, but to give you an idea, it's a scene. And then the sip keeps going. There is one sound. And in the movie theater, it was packed. There's one sound that comes back. And then the lights in the movie theater are turned up. They switch on the lights, and the movie ends like this. And I can't tell you what more about this scene, but because of how it's directed, it cuts like this. It's so surprising, but everybody in the movie theater look at each other and think, that's the end, but not in a bad way. They say, this is so smart because the mission of a movie is that you think about it, as I said before, for days and weeks. But with that kind of ending, I can assure you that everyone in the movie theater have been talking about this movie to their parents and their close ones all night long because it was such a great idea to end a movie like this. So yeah, I recommend this movie 100%.
Okay, well deserved, lauded film then. Good to hear. Okay, Wayward. This is, I think, Toni Collette in this one. It seems the process is school of wayward teenagers, and I think comes under the investigation of a small cop. Of what this school is about and its charismatic leader. Sounds like almost like a Stephen King premise again, but
Yeah, it's
oh dear.
a mystery thriller, and it's also an academy as Wednesday, not for gifted but for troubled teenagers in a town called Tall Pines. It's a Canadian series, by the way, and the academy is also called Tall Pines Academy. And well, let's say a couple. Come in, a new couple come into town, a new police officer who is also the actor who plays the police officer who is a transgender man, and it's Mae Martin who created also the comedy Feel Good a couple of years ago. And now she has, like, say, changed genres and doing this as a thriller, and she's now, well, no, sorry, he is now a transgender man, sorry. So he comes into the town with his wife, played by Sarah Gadon, who is pregnant and also a former academy student. Tall Pines Academy student, who, yeah, is run by, I mean, the academy is run by Toni Collette in a sort of like religious leader almost kind of way. It's this kind of vibe of a cult. So you never, there are two other protagonists who are a couple of teenage girls. And well, as you may guess, they end up being sent to the academy one way or another, or being like institutionalized in this place, who has well, its own rules, and a cast of teenagers who give it quite a charming vibe, let's say. It's a place for outcasts and of the high school, let's say, in this case, that they form like sort of a end up forming some kind of a mismatch family. I don't know. Well, the thing is that there's mystery to be solved. The movie starts with one of the teenagers escaping from the academy. And trying to escape and seeing and ended up and he ends up crossing paths with the police officer, with Mike Martin and his wife. And from then on, both the two girls and this cop try to solve what is this place really about and what it's doing to the teenagers. And really, it expands farther than that. It's, you get the real sense of this being a big cast of like, and to be said in this community and this place where there's something really off. And so this main character, the police officer, really starts noticing that things are off there in Tall Pines and in Tall Pines Academy, both. So you get the series is about discovering what is happening and about, from the perspective of teenagers inside, just trying to see how they can manage the academy, which is not it can be tough for them or even dangerous, depending, because this is like this kind of, you know, like thriller series. Yeah.
Okay. It's a series then, is it? It is a series, yeah.
It is.
Okay.
It can be a mini series. I don't know if it's going to continue, but it could continue or not.
Okay. Right. Next. Got a reimagining and retelling again of, well, I say a remake really, of the War of the Roses, which I think was a film that came out, I think, late 80s. I think it had big star names back then. It was Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. Here it's for Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman in a, I guess, telling the same story of a couple who are feeling the strains of marriage, and things escalate. It was kind of a semi-comedy back then. Big hit then, back to the original version, but this one is it's interesting what their take is. You saw this, Richard, was it? Yes. And I'm not sure what to expect to this, honestly, but was it good or serviceable or...
Yeah, but I think that's the right word that you use, yeah. Well, I have watched the other one from the 80s like once in my life. It was fun. Was this remake necessary? No. Let's put it this way straight away. No, obviously. Now, if you really want to make a remake of a movie like this with that kind of plot, I guess you have to choose the right couple. For the plot, I mean, it's a remake, but yeah, the plot is obviously that it's a couple, husband and wife with children who are pre-teenagers, and at first, he is very successful in his career. She is not. After 5 minutes, something happens, and it's the other way around. She's become extremely successful in her career as a kitchen chef, and he got fired, and he becomes a stay-at-home husband, but he has a lot of regrets about not going to work anymore, and this situation about her being successful but being kind of not there for the children, and him on the other is the other way around, obviously, creates obviously a lot of resentment and problems in the couple, and it escalates, and like in the movie from the 80s, it escalates so far that actually they start to not only fight verbally, but they also literally fight each other all the time. And back in the day, it was a dark comedy. It is here definitely also a dark comedy with some scenes that are quite trying to be emotional. But so what I was trying to say earlier is that if you want to do a movie like this, you obviously, the first thing that needs to be done well is to find a couple that has good chemistry and two actors and actresses that have great, let's say, that make people laugh literally, but have great sense of humor and that kind of talent. Olivia Colman, obviously, for me, is an extraordinary talented actress and is hilarious, actually, as a person. I think in interviews and in some movies early in her career prove actually that she's hilarious, and she's definitely the best part of the couple. I don't think Benedict Cumberbatch was the right person for this job. In my, I don't I, personally, I don't think is. I mean, they could have found someone else. And also, yeah, I didn't feel, yeah, I don't feel actually that they were a real couple. Most of the time, I definitely only saw Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman, which is a problem. There's also not enough scenes about literally being them being in love. What I mean is that the last 25 minutes, like in the first movie, it's them fighting each other. But they try to make it like it's dramatic, not only funny, but dramatic. But it is lacking. I mean, the movie lacks, is lacking the, in the first part of the movie, you don't believe in their romance. So it doesn't work. So, in my opinion, it doesn't work this part. Now, is the movie funny? But which is the most important thing? Is the movie funny overall? I think there are a few scenes where the movie is hilarious, but not thanks to them, but thanks to the supporting cast, by the way. Every time there's actually scenes that involve the supporting cast, the movie becomes hilarious. So, thanks to Allison Janney from The West Wing, she has one scene and she kills it. Thanks to Kate McKinnon and Adam Sandberg from SNL, they have a few scenes, and every time they are on screen, they are hilarious. But yeah, for the main couple, yeah, I was not very impressed.
Looks like it kind of having the success of the original one would lean heavily that it was there were two big mega stars basically, A-class. So and then they both have a can lean into their comedy. I mean, they have the dramatic chops to do the serious stuff and the comedic stuff. So maybe not the best pair for this, but maybe if they had Ryan Gosling or Margaret Robbie together as a as equivalent, maybe in this version it could be different. But yeah, I think it really does. It was a surprise that I thought it'd be work as a series, maybe, but as a film, it's a
Yeah.
tricky one to pull off. Well, okay. Well, that's the last film of this show and for this month. So I'd like to thank my hosts this week or month, Richard, Alfonso, and Andrew. And for you listening, we'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this film and TVReview.com episode. Catch the latest film and TV reviews, together with regular episode content from the world of film and TV every week. See you soon. Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today.